Good morning, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia. Before we begin our meeting, we would like to read our declaration. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the Theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy, and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. It welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. To fulfill this declaration, we hold two weekly public meetings. Of course, here on Sunday mornings from 11 a.m. to 12, the doors open at 10:30, and we take up a theosophical subject. We have just finished with a discussion on the Theosophical movement. And now in November, we're beginning up reincarnation and karma. And today's topic is the three fields and classes of karma. So we're gonna jump right in. Then we also have a public meeting on Wednesday evenings from 7:30 to 8:30 in the evening. Now on that evening, we have available to the public our library in the front of the room. It has straight line theosophical books, pamphlets, and information so that if on a topic we are discussing and we have interested in looking into it further, there are many books available to help us broaden our understanding of these ideas. Now, that library opens at 5:15 and closes at 7:15, and then the meeting begins at 7:30. And we are presently, I think we're on chapter 3 next week. And can't quite remember what that subject is, but we will let you know when you come Wednesday. We won't keep it a secret.
Evolution.
That's why we forgot. Edwards evolution. Yes, it's a consuming subject. And our class tonight touches on that as well. Okay. But I would like to also remind you that all the activities at this lodge are done on a voluntary basis. This is like a school of volunteers. And that you can contribute in any way, shape, or form. You can study and you can help participate in classwork. You can become an active participant in what goes on here. And you, that can be expanded as far as you can imagine. So that you'll try to experience or reawaken that spiritual nature which resides in each one of us. So in endeavor to do that, this Sunday morning's class is taking up the subject of karma. Now karma is a vast, vast subject. And we're just going to talk about it, but we need to understand that this is the unerring law of the universe. Nothing is outside its purview. That everything is affected by this law. But man being man, we're only concerned about ourselves. How does it affect us? Well, we're going to talk about that right now.
So the topic then is the three fields and classes of karma. And we will look at, in this section of the panel, we will look at the idea of the classes of karma first. And just to set the stage then, we just wanted to go over what is karma. Nowadays, people say, oh, well, karma's going to get you for that. But what is it that, do they really know how is karma going to get you? But it's, as was just stated, it's a huge idea. It doesn't just affect man, it affects the cosmos, it affects everything. So, but basically, in regards to man, karma is action and reaction. It is said in the ocean that is the law of ethical causation, justice, reward, and punishment, the cause for birth and rebirth, yet equally the means for escape from reincarnation. And the effects kind of flow back and forth. You know, whatever, there's that physical law of action and reaction. Well, that's the same with karma. However you act, you will get a reaction back. Last Sunday, we looked at the three fundamental principles of theosophy, the second one being law. And karma is part of this idea of cycles and of law. Because it's actually karma and reincarnation that set up these cycles that people go through throughout their many, many, many lives. It's also known as the universal law of harmony. The universe, no matter what happens, whatever man does, based on his choices and his ethics, the universe will try to balance if there's these negative vibrations that are put out. And that is where karma is. Karma is that balancing principle. It makes man's condition easier to explain. People that follow some of the major religions blame God or thank God for whatever it is that is happening. But indeed, it's not. It is the choices that we have made in any given life. And it's not as if what I do in this life will affect the next one. Karma is not linear. What we, and we'll go into the different types, but what we are experiencing now doesn't necessarily come from the immediately preceding life. It could be one thousands and thousands of lives previous. So we have that choice then to determine what our future life and the upcoming life will be. And whatever comes to us is our duty. Karma creates these situations that will come to us, and it is our duty, based on our previous choices, to do what does come. We can't question it. It is ours to deal with. Mr. Judge talks about whatever comes to us, what our duty is, as being an opportunity and not an obstacle. In many respects, how our previous lives will be determined about not only our choices, but even thinking. And we'll hear in one of the talks that karma acts on the plane of thought. So whatever our thoughts are will determine, our actions can be good, but if we're doing it for a selfish reason, then, you know, there is that negative aspect that will come to us. Karma is not fate. Although people will say that, well, you know, I have no choice. You know, whatever comes to me, you know, it's fate. No, it's not. We have that choice. We can change our attitude about things. And even if our lives are in such a way, say we are disabled in some respect, there are people that really work with that disability and can actually change their thinking and use it for a positive response, whereas some people will be angry their whole lives. And these two people, their karmas will be different based on what they're thinking. So we'll look at then, since we just kind of discussed what karma is, we'll look at the three classes of karma. And a class in the dictionary says it's a set or category of things having some property or attribute in common and differentiated from others by kind, type, or quality. So there are three classes of karma. The first one is that, and we can find these listed and described very well in the Ocean of Theosophy. The first class is that which has not begun to produce any effect in our lives owing to the operation on us of some other karmic cause. So as we had just said, karma is not linear. So whatever we are due to receive doesn't necessarily mean that in the next life it will happen. What we're doing now, there has been this energy that and magnetism that comes to bring us to a certain life based on physical qualities, mental qualities, and that karma is bringing us to this place and time. And depending upon what those lessons are that we have to learn, will determine at that specific time that this is when we will be born, and these will be the issues, the lessons that we're going to have to deal with. So the second class is that karma which we are now making and storing up by our thoughts and acts, and which will operate in the future when the appropriate body, mind, and environment are taken up by the incarnating ego in some other life, or whenever obstructive karma is removed. So what this means by obstructive karma is that in any given life, we could be working off lessons from a previous life, so that when that is finished with, then another sort of karma, issues, lessons will appear. But right now we are making and storing up a karma that we will have to deal with in a future life. By the way we act, our choices, are we moral? Are we ethical? Are we making choices and doing our duty because of what somebody else is thinking about us? Are we doing it just because that's what needs to be done and we want to help our fellow man? So depending upon our motive and our choices, that will determine what will happen. We are storing that up now for expression in a future life. So when karma of this particular incarnation is exhausted, another karma will assert itself. And that leads us to the third class. That karma which has begun to produce results. This is the third one, is what we are experiencing now. That from all of our choices, from our way, our mode of thinking, you know, the positive or negative things that we do, this is our life now, and this is based upon what, as we said, the choices and the motives that we have done in the past. It exhibits itself plainly, while other unexpended karma awaits its regular turn. So once if we're going to finish something up in this life, that will kind of leave the door open for another karmic expression. So we think that might be about all we have to say on the classes, and we'll look and see what happens next.
We have a tendency to look around us, but we only need to look at us, because we are the generators of karma. We are dynamos. And why concern ourselves with what we have done and not look at how we can create our karma? Well, we are anyhow. We create everything that we see. We're creators. So we live in a manifested world. So it's not one sheet in front of us, but as many layers. And we often say in these rooms that manifestation begins with thought, word, and deed. Well, the world in which we live is no different. We are affected . And we say we are affected, these tendencies that are some within our own nature. That the classes of karma, or the planes of its manifestation, are on our inner minds, in our intellect. And so we have karmic results there. But we also have a mind. And it's stated that beyond mind, there is no thought. So there is no karma. So in our minds, we create reaction. And then in our feeling nature, the feeling nature is that portion of us that we call our astral or our psychical natures. Now, we looked at many expressions of this idea, but, you know, thought, word, and deed. So where does this moral and ethical aspect of humanity come from? And it answers the question of where it comes from. It's through the harmonizing of the feeling nature with the intellectual nature, the harmonizing. And from there we have an ethical and a moral nature arises. But that's through natural processes. It is always trying to harmonize. There's so much that we can be saying about karma, but we are creating it now. And we create it by our thought, our word, and our deeds. So we begin by changing the world by how we think. Then we speak. And then we do. So that's just a natural progression of how things manifest. Well, we'll just stop because there's so much that can be said about karma and how it manifests. So we'll take questions.
Yes.
Regardless of the class of karma, whether it's from the past, whether restoring it for the future, experiencing it now, it doesn't seem we have too much control about it. The only thing we can do, is it the only thing we can do is focus with what we're experiencing now? Or do we have influence over what we'll experience in the future or what will come to us from the past?
Well, as was said about thought, word, and deed, if we look at ourselves and let's start off by saying we don't want to say, I'm going to do something good because I want to create some good karma. We need to say, I'm going to do something good because it'll help my fellow man. So it's our motive, it's the choices that we make that will determine the future karma that we have. But we have to look at the reason why we are making those choices. And the thought, word, and deed idea certainly comes in here. We are dealing with what we did in a past life now. The awareness that we do have these choices based on our desires, based on our motive. So we can affect the future, but it has to be for the right motive.
But you also must be in the moment and not be caught up in your mind an interpretation of what's actually happening. You know, you have to be present to what you're feeling and what's actually happening in front of you. So we all create our future by how we act in the present. And that, you know, and that goes with our very basic thoughts. And none of us can deny that we've all been taught in mostly the same way. So that is a battle for all of us.
Yes. So when situations come to us under law, under karma, and it's the effect of something that we did in our childhood or 2 years ago, we don't know, or previous life, if we have no idea what we did to cause this, how is that, you know, just, how is that fair? That comes closer to the why did God do this to me? You know, like, how are we going to learn from something if we don't even know what we did to cause it?
Well, it's not what God did to us, it's what did I do to me idea. And it is said that if we knew the causes of, at this stage of evolution, it is said that if we knew why, what those karmic causes were, we wouldn't be able to handle it. You know, knowing that, you know, we, you know, murdered people or were mean, kicked the dog or whatever, that those kinds of ideas we wouldn't be able to handle. But when we look at it, it's like, it doesn't matter, because if the Bhagavad Gita talks about doing your duty as it comes to you, and you do it because it's something that needs to be done. And if we're looking at it from that aspect, it doesn't matter why we did what we did in the past. As was just said, we're living in the present, and we need to deal with the present and make those choices based on a good motive, and will it help another?
To follow up on that previous question, being that you don't necessarily know the specific causes that led to the circumstances we're experiencing, isn't the main issue whether or not we're willing to take responsibility? Because whether we know or not, we still have to determine that we are responsible for it. Isn't that where karma makes the biggest difference in our lives?
Yes, we need to accept what comes to us as ours, and take responsibility for it. I mean, that's what's lacking everywhere. No one takes responsibility for it. So, in that world in which we live, if we take responsibility for it, things become more real. People become more responsive. Yes?
Well, to the argument of, if we don't remember it, why are we responsible? It seems unfair. Through the evolution of traffic laws, brought about by mothers against drunk driving, it used to be a great excuse. Well, I don't remember, I was drunk, I didn't mean it. But obviously there's a lot of evidence. You know, you put yourself in that position to begin with. So yes, you are responsible. You may have been out of your mind at the time you hit that person or ruined that property or whatever. But as society evolves, we realize that no, that's not an excuse. That's not a valid excuse. You are responsible. Plus, you'll never learn the lesson if you're not held accountable. Mm-hmm. You know, there's cases of people that have been let go after 5 or 6 times, and then they kill a person or a whole group of people, and then what kind of karma is that? Not only for the individual, but for the whole collective system that let that slide.
The whole collective system, that's why it exists, because of the system. Okay, that we live in a world that thinks that the answers lie outside of us, and that the boogeyman is outside of us, and that everything to be gained is outside of us. So everyone lives outside their body, and they're only concerned about how they're perceived.
And the whole idea with karma is that we're not looking to have somebody else take the responsibility for our actions. You know, at the time of death, it's like you get absolution. And no, it's like you're going to take your actions with you into a next life. In the back?
Well, the three fields of karma then are the body and the environment, right? The physical. And then there's the mind or the intellect. But then there's a third category, psychic or astral. Do these three fields play out at once? Are we to try to clean up the most physical using the mental, but then what do we do about the psychic and the astral?
Well, any one can be happening separately, or they can be all happening together on different planes. That this is the astral, the physical, the psychical is our feeling nature. And if we look and we consider spiritual ideas, our mind becomes focused in a different direction. And the blending of the mind and that psychic nature brings forth virtue. That's why you say that this is all from within outward. It's a natural process. Now that we're only becoming cognizant of the psychic nature, truly. But we know we all feel, and this just seems to be a physical phenomenon. But there is electrical current going on behind that, a whole matrix. And it's through that manifestation happens. Yes.
Follow up with that. There's always the question, especially in our times, why do bad things or why do evil things happen to good people? And it seems from what was said there that a good person is just the karmic expression in this life of a balancing of our feeling and our intellect. They're all in accord. Yeah. But it might not have been the case in the past. They could have been out of balance. So wouldn't it seem then that what we call a good person or an evil person doesn't really have to do with their true soul nature? It's just the way it's being expressed in this life.
We knew a woman, we had just met her, and it seemed as though she had everything together. She was smart, she was physically healthy, she volunteered, she did all these wonderful things for people. And to the outside, it seemed as though her life was absolutely perfect. And we made a comment about her because she just seemed so together, had a good job and just everything. And the person said to me, "Well, don't you know?" I said, "What do you mean?" She goes, "She's married to a raging alcoholic. And her whole life when she was home was in shambles because of this." And we were amazed at how this woman was able to keep it together and not let anybody in on what was actually happening. So here she had the three fields, she was all together, but her circumstances were such that she was able to make the choices. She made the choice to stay with him. She made choices to help take care of him.
She was being attacked on the psychic level.
Yeah. So it's like, you never know.
Just to, you know, this power that we all have, which we do not take responsibility for, or even sometimes acknowledge, or found, there's a little pamphlet out there called The Aphorisms on Karma. And I invite everyone to, you know, look over it. It's quite, eye-opening. We had intentions of reading some of these, but on this subject of our astral and psychic nature, aphorism 30, karma operates to produce cataclysms of nature by concatenation, continuation from one to another, through the mental and astral planes of being. A cataclysm may be traced to an immediate physical cause, such as internal fire and atmospheric disturbance. But these have been brought on by the disturbance created through the dynamic power of human thought. That's our thought. You know, and the blending of those is our ethical and moral nature.
Well, here in this room we heard many stories. And the simplicity of these ideas is shocking when we take time to think about them. And there was a statement made in one of the literature books that we never forgot. And it said, repeat the failures if you fail. Repeat them. Why? Repeating the failures and you become full of success. Why? Because necessity is the mother of invention. And we'll come up with ideas, either listening to the elders or study, contemplation, concentration, and meditation. Aha! Well, I may fail several times more, but my aim is to follow the lines laid down by the teachers from a moral and ethical point of view. And lo and behold, why, I feel a whole lot different. I can do this. How did I learn? By repeating the failures over and over again and not giving up until we refined our practice, our actions.
Our problem with failure is we identify ourselves with it. And it is not us that is failing. It is just that situation wasn't the right approach. There is something that needs to be readjusted. That way the failure becomes a success because one learned from it.
Yeah, HPB says to keep trying. She said, no matter how many times you fall, get up and keep trying. So we can see then that it's our attitude towards what is happening to us. If we're going to accept it and change our attitude and go on, or are we going to fall under the sway of whatever that negativity is that's going on? So again, it's our choice that we make.
Yes.
When it comes to the three fields of karma, of course we think it's good if we have a healthy body and a clear mind and good intellect and a good moral nature, balanced feelings, and we think it's bad if we have the opposite. But isn't that just a judgment? In the light of karma, is there really such a thing as good or bad? Can we make something good? Can we misuse a good opportunity or take advantage of a bad opportunity? Then what is the karma? So is karma relative in that regard to good and evil, or is it absolute?
Well, karma is a teacher. It's showing us something. Something is coming to us that we need to pay attention to. Good or bad, it's, you know, it may seem bad, but it may be the best thing in the world for us. You know, nothing is good or bad, only what we make good or bad. So, through that ethical and moral nature, we try to be of help to one another, to aid each other, to cooperate with each other. That's a moral stance. So.
And if we're born into a wonderful life, we have loving parents, a loving family, we have a good job, our children are wonderful. If we just accept that for face value and not, you know, help others, not have an attitude of gratitude, you know, we are creating karma for the future, because it is said that the way we progress is by universal brotherhood, by helping others. So if we're just accepting life as is, and it's like, aren't I wonderful? Look what I have. And we're not helping others with that, then no, we are setting ourselves up for something what is going to be perceived as negative. And then that perception of whether our life is negative or not, again, depends upon our attitude. And how we deal with it is based on our motives.
Don't fall in that pit of separateness. Okay, it's very dark and lonely. And, you know, it's very easy to fall into the pit of separateness.
We've read and heard the expression to have faith in karma. Of course, when we use that term, sometimes we're thinking of having faith in something outside of ourselves, faith in karma. What does that mean? How is it any different than having faith in God or that type of thing?
Well, we would think that having faith in karma ultimately will bring it back to us. Because if we know that it's based on our choices and our motives, our right thinking, then having faith in karma is having faith in yourself.
Having faith in the universe, saying whatever is going to come is going to come, and welcome it, and accept it. Renounce. I mean, this becomes the battlefield of our existence. Yes.
Well, a student of theosophy uses the phrase to have faith in yourself. Is the student referring to the three fields of karma that are unfolding at this plane, the personal? Or is it a faith in a different identification of self?
We missed the beginning. Faith in yourself? Is that what you said?
Yeah. What does faith in yourself mean? Does that self mean the personal that plays out in these three fields of karma? Or is it to have faith in some other definition or identification of self?
Well, we can look at the idea of self as being the higher self. And the idea is to clean up the lower so that this higher self can come through, and we can then progress on a higher plane. So we think having faith in yourself then would be faith in the higher, knowing that if we can open up our minds and realize that we are spiritual beings, then that higher nature can come through and we can have faith that that will be a positive experience. experience then.
Yeah, you know, that all this knowledge lies within us. We just have to find a key to unlock it. And we're told, study and otherwise. Always an application or always a trying to understand spiritual knowledge. That is how we can set ourselves free. That's how we can blend this feeling nature with our intellectual nature, our thinking nature, by harmonizing those ideas. Yes.
It would seem that all human beings have certain common fears, worries, about death, about what might happen after death. We've been focusing on the three fields of karma, classes of karma in life. But what does karma teach us that might help us come to grips with our fears and uncertainties about death and what happens after death?
Well, I think the basic idea is you're an eternal being. You're eternal in your nature, in your true nature. You're talking about that higher self. This is just a blink of the eye. We never were not. We always will be. And we are self-conscious now. We're on this self-conscious plane of Godhood. Deep within us is all this knowledge. But we don't believe it. We don't believe it. If we only believe that we were these beings, then perhaps it can begin to shine through. You know, it's the one thing that we all share, this oversoul, this consciousness that all humanity shares. So our connection to it is very profound. We may be at the forefront, we may be leading the way, but that makes our responsibility that much greater. Yeah, there's very few that come through that front door and wanting to know the truth. And fewer yet who are willing to apply it.
And just knowing that karmically, if we make the positive choices based on universal brotherhood, that we can affect a more positive, hopefully, life in the future. Because like was said, we don't know what is going to happen in the next life because...
Great things.
Yes.
Great things.
That...
I'm sorry. Carry away.
So that whatever we choose here will determine the afterlife and then the next life. Well, some...
Cause and effect. Effect is simply a continuation of the cause. The cause can be seen in the effect.
Yes. I want to ask, you've been talking about karma as it relates to an individual. Do you address it as it relates to groups, people in groups like countries or like the American Indians or, you know, through history, the changes that have happened to certain groups of people?
Yeah, there's a national karma. And that's how great groups or races die out, because they've exhausted their energy. Things suffered are things that have been done in the past. So, the Mayan civilization, the Egyptian civilization, they all had their beginning and they had their end. You know, because they exist in time. everything has a beginning and an end in time. And so there's that period of, you know, of infancy, youth, maturity, old age, and death. It's the same with civilizations, with groups of people, with families. You know, that we incarnate into a family because it's the economy of nature. They have something to teach us. There is something that we need in this family for us to continue on. So we are given an opportunity to deal with it.
And there are, and the choices that a group of people make in any given country doesn't have to be the same as everybody else. There can be those people that stand out from, like, you know, be, what is it?
Coming out and be separate.
That everybody in that group doesn't necessarily have to be the same as everybody else. They can affect, and those are the people that might be able to affect a change if it's a type of group that maybe is warring or having, you know, doing negative things with the population, that there can be those people that are put in that for in that group for a certain reason. So each section, well, just an example, we know years ago during the 60s there was a huge focus on the Native American culture, where people that who were not Native American really found themselves attracted to the Indian culture, the clothes, the jewelry, the spirituality. And it was said that those people that were attracted were apart from the group that had, you know, when the Native Americans were being persecuted, they may not have been part of that group and came in now so that they could help the future people, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Before, from the path forward, the importance of thought, words, and deeds was mentioned, and it got us thinking that how many of our thoughts, words, and deeds are truly our own? It would seem that what we call our thought, word, and deed may be picked up from our family, our nation, our race. So we're not really acting individually. We're acting collectively if we let our thoughts, words, and deeds be determined. So it's really quite a challenge then to determine what is it that I want to think? What is it that I want to say or do independent of the influence of the environment and the family and so forth? That's not an easy thing.
But that's the whole point. We have to look at that. We have to look at our surroundings. We have to look at everything. Because we are a product of our environment. And all the thoughts, the ideals, the mores, all that, we've absorbed. Whether we wanted to or not, but we absorbed it. We tried to get by in that environment, or excel in that environment, or rebel in that environment.
And one needs to be aware that the way they're thinking has been affected by their family, by their religion. And by having that awareness, and if they're not comfortable with the thinking that they were brought up with, then that awareness will enable them to possibly look, because we know everybody who, and we feel pretty certain that pretty much everybody that comes in here was brought up with a different type, a different way of thinking, and that something was uncomfortable and they were not happy. We were not happy with the way things were. So that prompted, that awareness then prompted us that, yeah, we can change our way of thinking.
Unrest. Unrest. Always searching for the truth. Yes.
In the book, The Secret Doctrine, H.P.B. mentions karmic agents, the Lipika, L-I-H-P-I-K-A. Who are they?
Well,
who are they? What are they?
Well, they're the facilitators of karma. Okay? But on our plane of existence, we have to be aware that we don't become karmic agents for the fulfilling of someone else's karma. So that we, it's like if someone is angry, we don't facilitate that anger so it culminates in something. We try to appease it so that we are not a karmic agent. And the best way of doing that sometimes is walking away from it. Well, maybe someone else has an idea. Yeah.
So if we don't live in isolation, we can.
Right.
We are continuously interacting with others, and as soon as we do, we are a part of their karma. We are part of their physical condition, and so in that sense, the way we think, feel, and act in that contact, we cannot help to be at least some influence.
Yes.
Karma.
So we've talked so much about karma today, and it just seems maybe we should bear in mind it's everything. It's like almost everything we think and do is related to karma, and everything we think and do plays out a lot in a future life. Then there must be a connection between reincarnation.
We look at the idea of reincarnation as it's called a sister doctrine, that reincarnate in our mind, it's almost like reincarnation is the vehicle for karma. I mean, we make the decisions, but then everything gets reincarnated, there's another manifestation, and that karma is moved on with this new form. So we just think it's almost like a vehicle for karma.
That's how this law is kind and merciful, because it comes back to us. That of our own making comes back to us. And this is how we learn. I always mentioned self-reflection. When something happens, do we look and see, wonder how that happened? Where did that come from? And sometimes we can discover little things in our nature that we weren't aware of. And that's called the adventure of life.
Well, we pretty much come to the end of our time, but we do want to read one sentence that is from Mr. Judge's Ocean of Theosophy. The force of a certain set of bodily, mental, and physical faculties with their tendencies may wholly inhibit the operation on us of causes with which we are connected, because the whole nature of each person is used in the carrying out of this law. Our meeting is over.
Okay, darling.